This is the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. This show examines the latest legal topics and news facing families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. It is hosted by lawyers Rob Schenck and Will Smith of Schenck Smith LLC, a personal injury law firm based in Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome to the show. Hello out there and welcome to episode 45 of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. My name is Rob Schenck.
And I'm Will Smith.
Who goes for his cup of coffee every time he's prompted to give his name. So it's really interesting. So after 45 times of doing this, he hasn't learned his lesson. Anyway, we are trial attorneys and we are occasional co-hosts of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Thank you for joining us. As this goes to air, it's November 20th, 2017. So it's Thanksgiving week. What are your plans for Thanksgiving, Will?
I'm going to pick up my mom in Sautee and drive her to her family's place in Cobb County. Yeah, Cobb County.
Cobb County, Georgia. So what and do you fry your turkey? Do you like bake it normally? Like what do y'all do in the mountains?
Well, first of all, if it's just my family, like my immediate family, I don't like turkey. I think turkey is dry for the most part. It's not my favorite meat. So we generally eat ham, which is far more moist and succulent. Or we'll do whatever we want. Like we'll make a lasagna. It doesn't matter. But as far as her family is concerned, I'm sure somebody's going to bake it. I don't think I've even had fried turkey.
Fried turkey is actually pretty good because it solves the problem of it being dry.
The best turkey I ever had was at my aunt's house, my dad's side. One of her friends put a turkey in a brine solution, you know, salt, for like 24 hours, and it was very moist. I still prefer ham.
We definitely do turkey for apparently. This is going to be great when we talk about the Christmas episode. But anyway, yeah. My mother for Christmas would do ham and turkey, but Thanksgiving is generally just turkey.
Yeah.
Also this week, Justice League comes out.
I thought that already came out.
No, it has not come out
yet. What just came out then?
Well,
what came out?
As we recorded this, what had just come out in the previous few weeks was Thor Ragnarok, which was amazing. An amazing movie.
Okay.
But what is going on now, and again, this comes out this week, but there's an embargo on reviews within 24 hours of it, which is never a good sign when the studio says you're not allowed to print reviews of this movie until a day before, as opposed to weeks before or, you know, several days before.
Okay.
So they don't want, if it's bad, they don't want the critics to pan it far enough in advance where nobody goes to the opening day. So
yeah,
but we'll see. And also Laura Marsh, a friend of mine, that's her birthday this week, the 25th. Happy birthday.
Awesome. Wasn't it just Dennis's birthday?
They're all born in the same time period.
And Tracy too?
Yeah.
That's strange.
November 1st, November 6th, and November 25th.
Interesting.
A lot of the Marshes.
Yeah.
Anyway, today we're going to be talking about a tragedy that's been in the news in the past couple months concerning a particular nursing home in Florida. It's the nursing home is called Rehabilitation Center of Hollywood Hills, and it's the nursing home in which about 14 people passed away after Hurricane Irma.
Yeah, they're auditing the number of people who passed away because of the lack of preparedness versus just natural causes.
So 14 people died, but we it's the number of people that we can link
directly to
the lack of care is about 12.
About 12.
So just for those that don't have an adequate background in what happened, we'll go through that really quickly and then we'll talk about
it. If you've been living under a rock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Rehabilitation Center of Hollywood Hills Nursing Home in Hollywood Hills, Florida,
yeah,
owned by Dr. Jack J. Michael, was in the thick of Hurricane Irma in September.
Yeah, this is a South Florida nursing home.
Right. So when Hurricane Irma hit, it knocked power out in one of their transformers that powered the air conditioning at the facility.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is that it says the facility didn't lose total power, but just the after losing the transformer is when the air conditioning went out. And so you got about 150 residents in a two-story nursing home facility without air conditioning in September in Florida.
Yeah.
And it's humid.
In South Florida.
In South Florida. So temperatures, once the air conditioning went out, temperatures went up to the high 90s. And
they were even, I think, at one point they were even higher on the second floor because, as we all know, heat rises.
That's crazy about this, because when at least one of the individuals that passed that was taken to the hospital, their body temperature was recorded at
106.
100 degrees.
Yeah.
So
just to put that into context, your 98.7 is what you're shooting for. When you have like a 99 or 100, you know, you've got your febrile, which means that you have a fever. Mm-hmm. Anything above 101, 102, you start to get concerned, and you go to the doctor. But when you're talking 106, that is heat exhaustion.
And so
heat stroke.
And so out of the 150 people, you start having residents that are as old as 99. That ages there were 70 to 99. You started having respiratory arrest, heat exhaustion, other respiratory conditions, dehydration, and so people started to pass. And what's really strange is that you have all these workers there, the CNAs, LPNs that did not alert any state official, any law enforcement agency or EMS that there was a dangerous condition. So,
I agree with you on that. And among the dozens of calls that were sent out, that went out from the nursing home, only I think one or two mentioned something.
That's correct. So the 911 call started coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we have in terms of the us as hosts and the press have got 8 calls that were handed over by the city of Hollywood Hills.
Mm-hmm.
They total more than 30 minutes. Only one nurse mentioned that there was no air conditioning in the nursing home, and not one suggested that an evacuation was urgently needed. And then finally, it says that the clearest indication of the severity of the health crisis there came in the last call. A staff member says the center received a call about multiple residents being ill and possible deaths. I mean, like, almost like the cover-up began immediately, I feel like.
Well, you know, I want to, you know, give my perspective on this here. The nursing home staff, and definitely the owners of the nursing home, the nursing home administration, dropped the ball here. But I think that everyone involved dropped the ball. Everyone from Governor Rick Scott, even though he's trying to impose new regulations to fix this, to congressional representatives, to the emergency services. Do you know what I mean? Like, why is it not a priority for emergency services to say, hey, we're not going to wait for a nursing home to give us a call?
Right.
And so we will assume that is a high-risk facility to begin with, because that's the way they treat hospitals.
Right. So that's a good point.
Yeah.
So about 3 days later, this is September 13th when these initial deaths take place in this facility.
Yeah.
3 days later, Governor Scott releases an executive order, a governor's order, that says that within the next 60 days, all assisted living facilities and nursing homes must obtain ample resources, including a generator and the appropriate amount of fuel to sustain operations and maintain comfortable temperatures for at least 96 hours.
Which is 4 days.
Following a power outage. He expresses concern about why it took so long to call 911. And then he's saying that at least right now, he's wanting it to be coded into by the legislature, and then he says it'll be $1,000 per day fine. But in the meantime, after, so 8 deaths initially, Governor Scott responds with an executive order. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services impose a penalty on the nursing home for $20,965 a day for the 3 days that there was no power. And then I think another week after that, they pull the license.
Yeah, so all 200-something staff have been let go. It's shut down. Everyone's been transferred.
Yeah, 245 people laid off from that facility, and as of September 27th, it had closed permanently.
So I know a question that a lot of people have is, you know, were there any rules and regulations to begin with? And there were, clearly. That's the justification for CMS imposing an almost $30,000 CMP, a civil monetary penalty, against the nursing home for failure to meet certain regulations. So what they had before, in Florida, there was there were regulations that required nursing facilities to have an emergency preparedness plan that really didn't specify exactly what that plan needed to be. It said that it needed to follow all the requirements of CMS regulations. And just as a brief aside, CMS regulations, the federal regulations, are the baseline. It's kind of like the U.S. Constitution is to the states, in that it provides a floor of the foundation. So you can't take away any rights. You can't go below what that baseline is. But the states can add extra protections. So CMS is the baseline for how nursing homes have to operate. They can't go below that. Florida didn't add anything extra and just said, look, you need to have an emergency preparedness plan. You need to have an alternate source of power. And you need to make sure that you're following the CMS rules, which basically say the same thing. You need to have power. You need to have a preparedness plan. So what they're proposing now is, instead of having something that ambiguous, to, in Florida at least, explicitly state you must have a backup generator that can provide power for air conditioning or heat for 4 days. You must have that, and you must have it within the next 60 days.
That's right. That's what the executive order said, and this is that's pretty much the verbatim what Debbie Wasserman Schultz's bill is saying.
Yeah, and so I at the conference that I attended in the beginning of November, I actually had the opportunity at the very end of the conference. We went to the Rayburn House.
What's the Rayburn House?
It's named after Rayburn. I think his name was Sam Rayburn. He was a Democrat during the 40s who was a mentor to LBJ, and he was a U.S. senator, and he was very, very well known for anti-corruption, like wouldn't take any money from special interest. So when he passed, they named this administrative building after him, the Rayburn House. It's one of many administrative buildings. It has the Senate Committee for Foreign Affairs in it. And I only know that because I happen to walk by it. And a bunch of other, you know, committee rooms in this administrative house. It's big. It's on Constitutional Avenue. It's an enormous building, very beautiful. I sound like Donald Trump right there.
Many people
very beautiful
are saying
building.
This. You know,
many
it's
people
not just
said
me.
It's not just me. But so we were at the Rayburn House in one of their with one of their rooms, and Jan Schakowsky from Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky from Illinois, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who's been in the news for many different reasons. Among those, this Hollywood Hills nursing home is in her district. She is a U.S. Congresswoman, and she spoke on the desire to implement stricter and tougher regulations in CMS and in her home state of Florida that lay out exactly what a nursing home needs to do, because these are already in place for, as you can imagine, hospitals and you know, operating rooms. I mean, when disaster hits, an operating room, as you can imagine, when you're in surgery, has a backup generator. Why doesn't a nursing home? I mean, they're required to have emergency preparedness plans, but nothing explicitly tells them what they're going to need to do, which allows some wiggle room, right? For example, I think the regulations in CMS now say you need to have some sort of alternative energy source without really saying what it is.
That could be, you know,
solar powered, hamsters on a wheel. You know, it doesn't matter. What a lot of people want, what Rick Scott wants, is no, this is exactly what you must have. You must have a backup generator. Just like an OR, just like a hospital, you must have a backup generator that provides 4 days, no less, of emergency power to your AC and heat.
I don't want to body shame Governor Rick Scott, particularly because I could probably be mistaken for him. But when I look at him when he's on television shows speaking, doesn't he look like a cobra or a snake? Like, he, not like in his temperament or his character, I'm just saying, like, he looks like the head of a serpent.
You mean like James Carville does?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah. He's more of like a skeleton. I think it's because Rick Scott's neck is so small, no hair and no facial hair. He looks like something that has shed a skin and is, you know what I'm saying, is going to eat a mouse.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
I feel like that's, I don't know. It's nothing that he could say I can take, because he looks like, you know, red on yellow.
Yeah,
kill a fellow.
That's a
red coral, on Jack.
That's a coral snake.
Red on Jack. We between the two of us, we both know, and this could be corroborated with your mother, that I know more about snakes.
Okay, where are the fangs of a coral snake?
In its mouth.
Where in its mouth?
In the front.
In the back. Yeah.
Okay.
That's why they're really not quite as dangerous, because it's very hard for them to inject venom, but they are both neuro and hemotoxic, so
that's going to be
extremely.
That's going to be very difficult for Dennis to. He's going to have to look that up, how to spell it for the transcription.
Okay.
So, did you tell the listeners that you, the Debbie Wasserman Schultz, presented at the conference and addressed this?
I literally just said, at the Rayburn House, we got to see Jan Schakowsky from Illinois and Miss Wasserman Schultz from Florida talk about this issue.
Yeah. I was actually reading this particular article dealing with the owner, Dr. Jack Michael. I think that's how you would say that. It might be Michelle based on the way it's
written. It is Michelle.
Okay. Is that he never should have been licensed to begin with, because he looks like the Justice Department is investigating him for a lot of fraud charges that date back to 2004.
Mm-hmm. No, there's a host of issues with overbilling CMS with this nursing home. So, not that those necessarily go to emergency preparedness, but it's just one thing in a line of problems for this nursing home. But they've been shut down. They're not going to reopen. So the issue here for the nursing home industry, and I will say this, I am sympathetic to the argument that the nursing home industry is making in Florida. In that, what they're saying is, like, look, you're giving us 60 days to implement something that is going to take much longer than 60 days, because it's not as though you can just back up a generator. It's not like your house, where you go to Lowe's or Home Depot and get a generator and you put it in the basement and go, all right, well, honey, if the power goes out, at least the kids can watch Netflix for a couple of days. It's not like that. In order to put an industrial-sized generator that is strong enough and powerful enough to power a facility that has 200 beds, it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of money.
Oh, yeah. And so actually, you know, that's, you know, we mentioned Dennis's birthday all the time.
Yeah. Well, you do. But yeah.
And so he actually, he's an engineer, and that's his job, is he goes around to hospitals and he's the one that checks the backup systems.
Yeah.
And it takes a long time. Somebody's got to wire that all together, make sure it works, yeah. Then go and maintain it, to go and test it. Yeah. I mean, I dig it. But again, I don't want our audience to assume that it is, you know, Ma and Pa Kent that owns a nursing home and that this is going to cripple their ability to sustain their family. We're talking about giant companies.
Yeah.
We're talking about people that defraud the government that are being investigated by the Justice Department.
Well, as a matter of fact, if you have less than 50 residents or less than 100 beds and you are a smaller nursing home, you qualify under these proposed regulations for a loan to get the money that you need to get this emergency generator up and running.
Do we know the status right now about this in terms of our Georgia state legislature? I don't think we...
They're also looking into it.
Because, Georgia gets just as hot as Florida and just as humid in many places.
And as it stands right now, the Georgia regulations are just as... ambiguous. As CMS's current regulations and Florida's current regulations, in that, you know, there's a requirement for an emergency backup plan. Actually, I'm not sure that there's a requirement for a generator in Georgia. We'll have to look that up.
Yeah.
And we'll address that next time. But so the judge has recently sided with the nursing home industry, saying that, you know, this is unfair. They can't do this in 60 days. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. What I would say is I would be willing to agree with the nursing home that, look, we're saying that we can't get this done in 60 days. And it's not fair that if we don't have it done in 60 days, you immediately start fining us. What I would like to see is that everyone from the governor's office to CMS to local services work together with the nursing home industry and say, let's get this done within 60 days. If maybe it takes 70 days, but let's not stop. Let's not, you know, dilly dally, like my dad used to say, which just means waste your time.
I think that's pretty ubiquitous. Dilly dally? Yeah, everybody knows what that means.
Oh, do they? Okay, well, I didn't know. Okay. Anyway, let's not waste our time. Let's get this done. What I don't want to see is just throwing it onto the nursing home and go, all right, well, we've done what we should have. We said you got to have this done in 60 days or we're going to start finding you. Because it is everyone's fault as far as I'm concerned. It is the congressional representatives of that district, including Wasserman Schultz, including Rick Scott, the governor. It is everyone's fault because it's not as though you were surprised that there was a hurricane in South Florida. It's not as though you didn't know that there weren't explicit, specific regulations detailing what a nursing home must do in the event of a hurricane. It's not as though this is a surprise to anybody. So throwing it all on the nursing home industry, yeah, they're at fault. But I don't like everybody pointing their finger at them and going, those are just the bad guys. No, all of you did bad in this. All of you.
So what was Debbie Wasserman Schultz like in person?
You know, she's very passionate. I didn't go up and speak with her. You know, she just came in and as any congressional person is, I'm imagining she's extremely busy. So she popped in, told us her plan to increase safety for nursing home residents in the case of emergencies like this. For Florida, and you know, she made some brief comments on the proposed regulations for CMS overall, and then left. So, you know, good for her. I mean, I hope that she brings about some change. But again, my main thing is I don't like her or Rick Scott or anybody else all pointing the finger at the nursing home industry, even though we routinely think they're bad guys. And saying this is all your fault. It's everyone's fault. You know, to to act as surprised that a nursing home would lose power in South Florida because of a hurricane is like saying, like living in Los Angeles and not having a plan for an earthquake.
Yeah, and that's actually, I mean, that's going to be the basis for the multiple lawsuits that have already been filed.
Oh, yeah.
Against that nursing home.
Oh, yeah. And I'm sure that there's going to be suits filed against not only the nursing home, but, you know, possibly even the state government at some point. Because they failed as well. I mean, this is something that should have been addressed a long time ago and not within a small window that says, all right, well, this happened. Now you guys have 60 days. This should have happened years ago. Why didn't it? Yeah. Hurricanes in South Florida, like, they're not new.
And if we understand the statistics with the climate change, they're only going to be getting more often and more violent, the hurricanes.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is something that should have been addressed a long time ago. The reason, I mean, the very fact that a nursing home doesn't have a backup generator for AC or heat is absurd, because the nursing home residents are, you know, first of all, if you've ever worked in a nursing home, they will have the heater on in summer because they're, you know, older individuals and they easily get cold. But that doesn't mean that they can take extreme heat. They can't handle extreme conditions, period, the same way that, you know, somebody who might be in their 20s or 30s can. So they're very vulnerable to these emergencies. I mean, imagine if a NICU, a neonatal intensive care unit that cares for you know, premature babies and young infants, didn't have an emergency backup generator. I mean, how absurd would that be? So why is this the case with nursing homes?
Right.
And that's what makes me so mad, is that this is just now coming up. And I want people to take notice that this is on everyone's radar right now, especially for Florida. But if this happens in Georgia in the next year or two and there's no emergency backup generator, there's no one to blame but Georgia representatives.
Yeah.
Because you guys saw this happen in Florida and decided, well, you know what, we're just going to hope it doesn't happen during our watch.
And it doesn't take a Superman or a Wonder Woman to make sure these things get...
No, and I get the fact that it's expensive and you can't just back up a generator to a nursing home, and maybe you can't do it in 60 days, but let's go ahead and start that process today. Maybe it takes 62 days. I don't know how long it's going to take. Maybe it takes 12 months, but what shouldn't happen is that 12 months or 4 or 5 years down the road, we're finally getting around to saying, well, maybe we should go ahead and make it a requirement. It should be a requirement in every single nursing home. There are currently 1.5 million residents in nursing homes in this country. This should be a major concern for every one of the 50 states and are not quite a state, but almost a state, Puerto Rico. It should, so every single place that the U.S. has dominion or control over, this should be a major concern, and this should be something that we instantly and immediately address.
And speaking of dominion and control, we both have dominion and control over the amount of time that we spend on this podcast every week. I was going to segue out with Wonder Woman and Superman with the Justice League connection, but you kept going. So, but... This will conclude this episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. As always, you can download the audio or MP3 on Stitcher, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcast from.
And Spotify.
Yeah, well, hopefully by this time, Spotify will have our podcast, but we'll see. Maybe not this week, but next week.
But we are going to be on Spotify.
We better
be. Moving on up.
We better be. Next stop, Thursday night on NBC.
Mm-hmm.
Must watch TV. Anyway, thanks a lot, everybody. We will see you next time.
See you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Please be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, and feel free to leave us some feedback. And for more information about the topics discussed in this episode, check out the show website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. That's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.